Okay, up next, we're going to take your phone calls with Dr. Stephen Greer and Paula Harris when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. Stephen Greer, Paula Harris. You know, Paula, one of the things I've admired about Stephen over the years is he is meticulous and no nonsense when it comes to this subject matter, much like you are.
Well, you know, I've been working with Stephen for a long time. I was helping him with the Disclosure Project. I saw Monsignor Balducci up on the screen yesterday because I brought him to meet Monsignor Balducci. I think it was 1999, 2000, when he had come to Rome to film the military witnesses. He was very meticulous. We rented a room near the train station. We filed them in. We got their testimony. And then he met Monsignor Balducci. He has done so much in the field. He has walked his talk, and that is why I admire him so much. And I just feel that we're just the helpers, the ones that you know, facilitate some of this. And as Stephen has said, the film is for the people, by the people, and disclosure is happening this way. It's from the bottom up, not from the top down.
You are no nonsense, Stephen, when it comes to this subject matter.
Yeah, well, I take it very seriously. I mean, you know, I've given up around $500,000 a year in income as an emergency physician. I'd be in a very senior position. I'd been chairman of the department. And so, you know, if you're going to give up that kind of work and career and earnings to make virtually nothing, and contrary to all the rumors out there, I mean, my wife and I and my family have given up so much, but it's because we know what's at stake. It's really the future of our civilization and this planet that needs to have some clear information and some transformative technologies and consciousness that lifts us up to another level, because we're not going to solve the big problems on this planet from the level of consciousness that created it, that paraphrasing Albert Einstein. So I think we just have to look at this and be very, very careful. I've certainly made mistakes through the years. I've not done a perfect job. I've done the best I can with the resources we've had, which has been of a virtually 100% volunteer staff and people. And yet, you know, what I always say to folks is that if we're sincere in what we're doing, we can do a great deal if we come together and do it. And, you know, this film is an example. About a year ago, I had the idea to do it. And I was at a conference in Phoenix. I think you were there, George. And I said, Look, we're going to do a film by the people, for the people. And guess what? All of you are going to be the distributors. Now, at that time, it didn't even exist that this company had created an ability so that everyone listening to you right now can go to SiriusDisclosure.com, click the affiliate button on the screen where the player where you can see this movie, and you can become a distributor. And if you have a nonprofit or just yourself and you want to get a percentage of the revenue from the film, that'll go to you. The rest of it will go into this new energy research lab that we want to create. Because I tell you what, we raised a few hundred thousand dollars a few years ago to try to provide grants to people working on their own to build up these technologies, and they just couldn't do it. They need a support of a professional lab to do high energy physics and advanced physics and engineering. And so that's really what we want this film to do, is to open not only the doorway and a portal of knowledge and disclosure, but to bring about some practical solutions based on, you know, how these UFOs are moving around. They're not using rockets. They're not using jet fuel. They're not using internal combustion. They're not using nuclear power. They're using this advanced zero-point energy technology. And we know that Lockheed has it, and my uncle's old company. You know, my uncle worked on the lunar module and helped design the lunar module that took Neil Armstrong to the moon at Grumman, that became Northrop Grumman. And I've known men and women in these aerospace companies for years who have worked on these sort of sciences. But in the meanwhile, even though, you know, we have billions of dollars going into the black budget, into that, into these sort of operations, you and I are still driving cars using oil.
So this is ridiculous. Yep, sure. Let's take some calls here with you, Stephen, and you, Paula, as well. We'll go to Vancouver in British Columbia. Doug, let's get us going here. Douglas, go ahead.
Hi there. Appreciate you being on the show tonight, Dr. Greer. I watched the film today, and I was just curious to know, you had some devices on there that showed very simplistically that you could produce energy from just a couple of coil wires and magnets. And And I was curious to know, like, have you gone through the process of actually building one of these? I mean, taking the time, maybe half an hour to build one of these, just to prove that it actually does work? Because to me, this seems like a huge thing to give to the people that would be easy to build and quick to make and produce free energy right on the spot. And I have a second question when you answer that.
Well, I think that there are people who say they have done that. What our problem has been is anything at the level where it would actually run something in practically rather than a fraction of a watt or a few watts of power. What we want to do is to be able to study this to bring it to that level. Now, I believe those have existed in the past. I'm certain that Van Meyer's car that ran on water due to an advanced circuitry and electronics was legitimate. I know that Searle had a device. I know that T. Henry Moray had a device. I know that Tesla had worked on these things. But the problem is that if you do this in a small way, it can be an interesting science experiment. And I think there's a lot of material out there, and I think that's great. But at some point, we've got to come together and do a very rigorous research and development to build up devices, but do it in a way that frankly, the whole world's watching. Because if it's done in a secretive way, that's your Achilles heel. And what I mean by that is that, you know, we have in this documentary a report from the Federation of American Scientists where 5,135 patents, many of them dealing with these new energy devices, have criminally and without real oversight from the Congress or President been seized under national security orders. And this is the sort of thing that many inventors have run into. It is not a conspiracy theory. This is the abuse of power that we're facing. I think we have to figure out how do we do this so that we can bring these out in a way that provides energy for 7 billion people. So that's really what we're in. Now, have I personally ever built anything like this? No, because, I mean, you know, my wife has to hook up the DVD player. I'm just an idiot with machines. I'm great with a respirator or a defibrillator. I think Paula, you're better with this stuff than I am. But well, she's great with at least cameras. I mean, I'm like, you know, no good at it. But we know people who have worked in these areas, but what they need is the support of a professional research laboratory to build up a rigorous prototype that puts out kilowatts of power, but then also strategically position it so that millions of people know about it. You know, and the beautiful thing about this film, Sirius, is that, you know, there are over 4,000 people who crowdfunded it. And by the way, George, it is the largest crowdfunded documentary in history.
You used Kickstarter, right?
Well, we used it only for about 10% of the funding.
Ah,
we did it just
okay.
To get the word out. And then because, you know, they take between the finance fees, they take about 10%.
That's right.
But then we started our own site with somebody ingeniously helped us set up a program on our own site so that we didn't lose so much of people's contributions to the finance company.
Good for you. Good for you. And you had a follow-up question, Doug?
Yeah. Well, I was just curious to know if he considered the Nelson Rockefeller, which you mentioned in his documentary, one of the misanthropic elitists of the world, and also if the device that he showed on his documentary by Lifehack, just the wires and the magnets, actually does work, if he knows for sure it does.
Was it Nelson or Lawrence Rockefeller that you highlighted, Stephen?
Well, no, there are a couple of them, but one of the, you know, Lawrence Rockefeller actually, you know, I knew him fairly well. He's a very sweet man. He was the white hat who was opposed by his brother David and others in his family. He really wanted disclosure to happen and helped, you know, host the Clintons that when we were putting together the best available evidence. And I think he genuinely wanted, I mean, I had private conversations with Lawrence Rockefeller and his wife. Now, there are other members in that clan who really did not want to see this happen because, you know, Chase Manhattan Bank, which was David Rockefeller's oyster, as it were, they didn't really like the idea of bringing out something that would make the petrodollar system go away, which is what bringing out these new energy systems would do. I mean, because the petrodollar, hello, is based on petroleum. And so, you know, this would be an entirely different macroeconomic order that would be greatly decentralized because, think about it, every home and car would have its own energy plant. We wouldn't be connected to the large oil companies or the big oil-producing countries or coal mining fields or central electric utility grids. Well, that's a multi-trillion dollar issue that we're bringing up here, and that's why it's been so hard to do. I will say that as difficult as the disclosure work has been, the hardest thing I've ever tried to take on is this new energy area. The kind of opposition you encounter, the chicanery, the nastiness that goes on, is even worse than the things that go on in the UFO situation.
Sure does. Just an incredible story of greed and corruption, Stephen, how they just yes. don't want us to advance when it comes to that.
Exactly. And, you know, the only way that's going to change is that we stop being sheeple and we say, we've had enough of this nonsense. We're going to come together as a people, and we're going to make this change happen. You know, it has nothing to do with me or you or one person at a time. It's about millions of people coming together, raising awareness, putting their resources together, and beginning to understand that if we vow to do this, we can do this together, just as Martin Luther King had decided, look, it was enough of the racism, or we wanted to end slavery. Well, that wasn't easy either. But right now, you know, the world is suffering under what I put in with the briefing I put together for President Obama, what I called a macroeconomic slavery. And it is really appalling. And you asked me earlier why, you know, I would have left my medical career to work on this, is that I see that the world is truly in an emergency, but it's a emergency not just of the world and the geopolitical order and the macroeconomic dysfunction, but of the oppressiveness that everyone feels. And one of the things I say to people is to get out of the whole conspiracy gloom and doom thing and say, look, why don't we come together as a people and make the change that is in our hearts and our dreams happen? And that's one of the reasons, Paula, why I love you so much, because you've always understood that. And Paula's done amazing work in her life. I mean, she's sure much has. More than just a you know, she's done amazing work all the way back to the time of J. Allen Hynek and Philip Corso. And Paula and people like her have all contributed to this effort to bring about this change in awareness and to bring the truth out. But the purpose of it isn't just to end with information. It's to actually change the way we're living on this earth. And I think that's how we have to view it.
Paula, you enjoyed yourself consulting on this documentary?
Absolutely, and I think I want to add that I was present in Crestone when Stephen was, using the protocols, the C5 protocols, and I was blown out of the water by what we saw up in the skies. It changed my life. It changed my perception.
Right.
It changed everything about what I was doing because I internalized it and I digested it. It wasn't just information, And besides coming together for this, I think we ought to know that we are part of something greater, larger, and we can communicate with them. And we and Stephen showed me that. So that was a gift that Stephen gave to me because I'm a nuts and bolts reporter. I was even taking pictures last night. I took over 200 photographs of the premiere. I'm always working. But being with Stephen and Crestone.
You were a one-woman paparazzi. She was awesome on the red carpet with all the celebrities and folks coming by. And Paula was fantastic. And every time I see Paula, my face lights up because she's such a great spirit and such a positive energy. She's an amazing person.
I watched as much as I could on the webinar that you had last night, Stephen. Then, of course, I had to do the program. I would have been down there had I not been working that night. I was going to send producer Tom down there and have him call us like a roving reporter. It would have been fun.
Yeah, it would have been.
That would have been fun.
Let's go.
One of the problems with the streaming was that there was a lot of problems with the numbers of people wanting to see it and the bandwidth they had because we didn't have a large budget. Remember, this has been a crowdfund. We don't have any corporate sponsors.
Right.
And so we couldn't really do it the way we would have liked to. And for people who couldn't quite get on to see it, I do apologize. But, you know, it was beyond our ability to put together the team we needed in terms of just what it was costing. We were getting quotes of $30,000 and $40,000 and $50,000 to do a really a broadband streaming of that event, and we just didn't.
That's a lot.
You know, we don't have enough resources to do that. But people now we can go on to the website Sirius SIRIUS disclosure.com, and they can click on and they can view this film And they can also become an affiliate and a distributor. And you know, right now, there are 2,500 distributors and affiliates for this film all over the world. And what was beautiful also, I know that, Paul, you remarked on this, there were people there from Moscow, from Ireland, from Italy, from Hong Kong, from Taiwan, from Australia, from all over the world at this premiere. And it was just so exciting to see a sort of a global community came together around the idea that we need to end the secrecy, bring out the truth, bring out these technologies, and really reboot, as it were, our civilization onto a really sustainable path.
Stephen, are you going to ever show it on the big screen for the public, or is it just going to be available via internet purchase or DVDs?
Well, right now you can get it on the internet from video on demand or DVD. We're hoping to have it on the big screen, but you know, we have to see that we can do some kind of distribution situation. And one of the problems is that the big corporate distributors often want to take control of the film itself.
Right.
And we're very, very skeptical of that. And we want this to be as grassroots as possible. If there's a way that we can do that, that is, shall we say, clean and doesn't end up having the film a black shelved and put into the Black Pit of Calcutta, which, believe me, I've spoken to some of the biggest producers and directors in Hollywood, and I'm not going to name them, but they're big ones, household names. And they have said, you know, so many things like this get created, they get bought up by a big corporation, and they get put on a black shelf, and it never gets
seen. Yep, they get buried.
I don't want that to happen, George. I don't want that to happen.
I think that's happening with energy technology too, Stephen. Somebody comes up with an idea, they pay him $1 million or $2. He thinks they're going to develop it, and they shelve it.
Yeah, well, you know, I had a very senior intelligence official back in 1992. Personally offer me $2 billion, control over $2 billion, that's with a B, billion-dollar fund, if I would shut down CSETI and the Disclosure Project effort and be quiet.
Amazing. Well, he went to the wrong guy.
I said, no, thank you.
Nobody can shut you up, Stephen. You know that. So good for you.
Not for sale. I'm just not for sale.
Yeah, we're going to take some more calls when we come back in a moment. The phone lines are just jammed right now.
Great.
Paula, in terms of you, where are you going next? Any conferences?
Well, I'll be in Washington. That's where I need to be.
Okay.
I'll be there next week covering Steve Bassett's
Citizens Disclosure. Yep. He's working on...
And it's going to be the people that are going to be testifying. It's really impressive. And I know that Europe is waiting for this report. I will be giving it to my colleagues in Italy, in France, in Switzerland. This is a global effort, George. This isn't just local. And I love it when Stephen keeps saying, if we come together, we can make change. And that's the secret.
All right, stay with us. Coming back for some final phone calls as we talk about the Sirius documentary. Get up to our website. Look at the links. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you're a Coast Insider, you can participate in our Insider Chat, which will be on Wednesday night. Will Thomas, the Chemtrails researcher, will be our guest, and we'll take your chat questions. Just go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Okay, here we are back with you. Open lines. Let's go next to the Midland, Odessa, Texas area. Casey's with us on Coast to Coast. Casey, you're on with Dr. Stephen Greer and Paula Harris. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. First-time caller here.
Thanks.
I just wanted to say I really appreciate you guys and your work. I'll jump right to it. Basically, as I've been coming along with the information and following up with this for about the last 10 years now, I'm a young man. I've gotten involved with quantum syntax grammar and basically how our language has been handed down to us from obviously civilizations that are from not this planet. One of my questions is, as far as our involvement as a society, and we get further into the unraveling of all these, fantastic things that are going on with people like you out there that are giving us this information and this knowledge, how crucial is it for the society to catch up to, basically our Babylonian ancestors that have kind of bastardized our language and are on a completely different level when it comes to reading as far as it comes to communicating with extraterrestrials or if we were to start communicating with, as you would say, I guess, stargazers or people from other planets. That would be my first question. And then my second was, I'd like you guys to talk a little bit about in World War II, Hitler, when they shut the oil off to Europe, how he had originally pulled all the oil and the fossil fuel engines and actually had all the farmers install hydrogen engines. And if you guys could talk briefly about that as well.
All right, Stephen, can you handle that one?
I can handle, well, the first one, you know, I'm not an expert on what he's talking about. What I will say is that Erwin Schrodinger, the father of modern quantum physics and, particle wave theory, said the total, I'm paraphrasing him, he said the total number of minds in the universe is one, and that is, it's a singularity. And so what we have found, and I think Paula was referring to this a few months ago, in June of 2012, we were out in the high desert of Colorado, and the filmmaker and his crew was there with us, and we were using consciousness and remote viewing to make contact with these civilizations, and bang, more than one of these discs flew right over. And so what I tell people is that language is an expression of something deeper, that is the idea form that is emanating from non-local consciousness. And mind itself is actually an infinite field or sea of awareness. And as astronaut Edgar Mitchell, you know, we've talked about this together, that basically the whole cosmos is a conscious quantum hologram. So you can transcend the multiplicity of languages if you understand the structure of consciousness and how thought emanates from it.
And Hitler, too little too late, he was desperately trying to find alternative energy sources, wasn't he?
Well, actually, you know, we have some interesting photographs and information. It was too much to get into this film, where apparently people like Wernher von Braun and others had worked on some very advanced electromagnetic anti-gravity devices. And his secret weapon was not the atomic bomb. It was that material. And one of the reasons we wanted to have those senior Nazi scientists in the country under Operation Paperclip, and why Hermann Oberst and Wernher von Braun and others were brought in, is that they had such advanced knowledge of not just rockets, but of these really more secret technologies. And I do not believe that's a myth. I think there's a great deal of evidence to support that. Now, to what extent it was in an applied situation in Nazi Germany, that's some debate about. But I think there's very little question that he was, in fact, working on these sort of technologies. And our OSS, that later became the CIA, desperately wanted that knowledge that his senior scientists had.
Let's go to Al in the Bronx. That's in New York, of course. Hey, Al, go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Long-time caller and long-time listener for 10 years.
Soup, thank you.
My question is, have you guys possibly consulted with the gentleman that has analyzed the DNA of the Star Child skull?
That's Lloyd Pye.
That DNA Lloyd. To the current DNA that you have of the skeleton. And then also my second question is, have you guys ever thought about patenting the DNA of this skeleton, and then if there's any possible future usage for this patent on this DNA?
The answer to the latter is no, we have not gotten into a discussion of that. And on the first one, is that I have not had personal, and nor has Dr. Nolan, personal access to a sterile and forensic level of DNA extraction from the skull you're referring to. We have with this particular creature, so we really can't comment on the one you're asking about. I will say also, as I mentioned earlier, apparently there was one of these in Russia that was in captivity and died in captivity that was a little bit larger than, I think it looks in the photos and videos to be perhaps maybe 9 inches to a foot tall, that was died in captivity in Russia in 1996. Unfortunately, though, my understanding is that the FSB, which, you know, of course, was the successor to the KGB, eventually confiscated this, but not before there was some very good videotape and photographs taken. And you know, I was struck because at the time that happened, which, you know, many, many years ago, I had not yet seen this Atacama humanoid that I eventually was able to personally handle and get the DNA from the ribs and the skull. I really had not recalled how similar. And then recently someone sent me a link. And so that's something which, while we can't say it's the same species, it looks amazingly similar. So I think there's a great deal of research. And what I'm commenting on here is that there may be other specimens like this that are out there. We would like to do the kind of rigorous studies we've done with the top scientists like Dr. Lockman and Dr. Nolan, and as well as really high-resolution CAT scans and the correct x-rays. One thing I want to point out is that Dr. Lockman himself made a list of the exact x-ray views and angles he needed to make the determination and study that he did. So, you know, this is a very specific science. You need the best people in the world doing it. And, you know, I have to say, we're really very fortunate that a team like that surfaced to do this without charge in the interest of science. No one is being paid to do any of the work they're doing, by the way. And that's really remarkable. I mean, the people who are doing this are doing it because they really want to know the truth.
And, Stephen, even without the creature, the little specimen, the documentary is well put together just about the history of UFOs, the cover-up, the alternative energy. That stands on its own.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's what I point out to people is that, you know, a lot of people made a big deal about this particular specimen, which it is interesting, but there's so much more information. And one of the things we've also done, just for your listeners, is that if you go to Sirius Disclosure, again, S-I-R-I-U-S, like the star system, all one word, SiriusDisclosure.com, you'll see in the top center of the front page, it says UFO evidence. If you click that on, we're building an archive where you can see these military top secret witnesses, the photographs, the whole report on this Atacama humanoid, a lot of amazing government documents and other materials. And we're building that archive as much as we can with our volunteers and limited means. But what our purpose is that the movie really, you know, in less than 2 hours, you can only put so much material in there and not put people to sleep. So the filmmakers were very careful to create a narrative and a beautifully done piece of art, really. But it's a portal into more exploration and study, and that's what we hope people will do.
We go to London, Ontario now in Canada. Andy, go ahead, Andy.
Hello, George.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good, Andy.
Good. I had a question for Stephen. Have they determined whether it was a male or a female skeleton?
Any sex into that? Go ahead,
Steve. This is a very good question. You know, when the film was wrapping up, they had gotten some initial results indicating it could be male. Now there's information coming in. They don't know. What I'm saying, I'm going to say something here that I know that it may be a little bit beyond what Dr. Nolan would want to say at this point, but this thing is very strange. I mean, when you have something that is this symmetrical, but is obviously has so many bone changes from a human, and yet none of the known mutation areas and gene areas that control for these sort of skeletal changes are being found to be abnormal. The other thing that I want to point out is that around 9% of the genome of all the material is unmatched to humans. Now, a lot of it could be error and junk, but even if two-thirds of it is error and junk, if it's 3% different from a human, well, that's how different a chimpanzee is from a human. And I want to point out to people that a Neanderthal is 99.5% identical matching to a human. So this is something that may be years to go into these 2 million base pairs that are unmatched and figure out if that's just garbage or if there's some profoundly hidden secret in there or what. And nobody can answer that yet because, you know, everyone thinks that they look at CSI or these TV shows and they think, oh, well, you run a DNA, it's done. When you're dealing with something like this, remember, cracking the human genome took 10 years and $5 billion and thousands of scientists. So we're in uncharted territory here. It's a Promethean task, and the answers are going to take some time in the coming. The main thing is to do it well, do it rigorously, And I trust the team there at Stanford to do that.
Stephen, have you ever been threatened to back off? Not, you know, the fellow wanted to buy you out, but by anybody in government or anything like that?
Well, I don't know if they're, yes, actually. And in fact, the last 30 to 60 days have been the worst of the 22 years I've been doing this. I don't really dwell on that. You have to do what you can do. Luckily, I have wonderful people helping me, and when I do a public event, we have good security, but it's become really difficult. And, you know, it was a lot easier being in the ER taking care of shootings and stabbings and car wrecks and heart attacks than doing this stuff. But, you know, I can't dwell on that. I just, you know, we take reasonable precautions. And I think the main reason why we're able to keep going forward is that there are so many millions of people from all walks of life who are so supportive, because one of the, you know, for example, you know, people like, you know, Tim Robbins came to the premiere last night, and Michael Eklund, who was just in the movie The Call with Halle Berry, and so many fantastic people, you know, folks like, you know, I was just on a radio show with this guy who had been in the band NSYNC, Lance Bass, and he was talking all about his interest in this. And, you know, just being in L.A. for the last few days, I've met so many amazing folks that I had no idea had an interest in this. But, you know, they do.
Oh, it's huge.
And this is so exciting, because I think that's what we need. And, you know, I like to focus on the fact that there's a sort of a sea change happening here. And as to my own situation, well, you know, I kind of, you know, you kind of, where God guides, God provides. And, you know, you kind of have to at some point give it to that.
Okay, let's take another call or two. David in Southgate, California. First-time caller. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hey. First-time caller, long-time listener. This is David out of Southgate, California. How are you guys doing today?
We are okay.
Great. Good.
All right. Well, I got a question for y'all. One of my buddies, Jimmy Johnson, and me were sitting talking about extraterrestrials coming from millions of years ago, and maybe so happily probing one of the primates and never really evolving into the Neanderthal-like or humanoid-like as we are today. Do you think that's, what is your hypothesis on all that? Do you think that's...
Well, you know, this is very controversial, but, you know, one of the things I've spoken to with a number of scientists is this question of epigenetic augmentation. And without going into it a lot further, we don't know how life on Earth, might have been seeded. It's possible that life is a universal phenomenon and goes from planet to planet. And, you know, years ago I was talking to a JPL, Jet Propulsion Lab scientist, about these objects on Mars. And I know Richard Hoagland's talked a lot about that, but so have a lot of other folks. And Buzz Aldrin, the second man to walk on the moon, recently said, look, you know, we need to go back there and look at what these obelisks are, because there appear to be artificial structures there. And I was talking to this Jet Propulsion Lab scientist, and I said, why don't you at least disclose that? And he had personal knowledge of it. And he said, well, if we disclose that, it would show an ancient, maybe millions of year old connection between extraterrestrial civilizations and Earth and the emergence of humanity. And I said, well, good. And he says, no, you don't understand. It would collapse the fundamentalist orthodox belief systems of every religion on Earth. And I was kind of surprised to hear a JPL scientist say that in such a worried way. And so I said, well, you know, we need to follow the truth wherever it leads us. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, I can accept the fact that there's a supreme being and an unbounded consciousness. At the same time, I can accept the truth of science. And, I would think that most people on this planet could. He says, yes, but there's some very powerful interests that don't want the truth to come out.
Well, that is so true. So true indeed. Let's go next to Ben in Chicago. Get you in here, Ben. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How are you tonight?
Good, Ben.
Hey, Dr. Greer. I'm pretty fascinated in that zero-point energy myself. I learned a lot about it from an Arthur C. Clarke book. It's called The Songs of Distant Earth. Have you ever read that one?
Right. I'm familiar with it. Yes, I am.
Yeah, well, basically, you know, humans ran out of time on Earth in his fictional novel, and they needed to escape the Earth, and they developed a quantum drive based on vacuum energy. I was wondering, do you think that that that's something that could be possible. Is there people that are investing private funds into research for that right now?
Well, that's what we're looking for. And as I said, you know, the parent company for this film is an entity that we formed called Sirius Technology Advanced Research. And what we're wanting to do is have the resources from this film go into a research and development laboratory. Do we think it can be done? We know for a fact it can be done. We've dealt with too many top secret folks in both inside government and in corporations who have done this. The question is, how do you do it? Well, you got to do it in a way that is properly supported with real research, and you have to do it in a way that the public knows it's happening. It can't be something that's a secret project, and I don't think it can be sort of a private equity thing where, you know, like the next iPhone, you're going to try to keep it under wraps and do it so secretively. I think that's how you get yourself killed, quite frankly. So I think that the best way to do it is the strategy we have with the people supporting it. We're looking for folks to support that effort like we did this film, Sirius, whether it's – in fact, you can go to our site now and see the film, but you can also make a $1 contribution or a $10,000 contribution. And if enough people did that right now, maybe we would be able to raise the funds we need to open this kind of research effort. So far, no one in the new energy effort has ever been able to do it. We're hoping we can, because it certainly needs to happen. It isn't going to come out of the Department of Energy, and I don't see large corporate interests doing it. But I think if enough people understand what you're describing as a reality, and even the promise of it, it's worth a lot of people coming together and saying, why don't we see what we can do? Let's dream a different dream than the nightmare the Earth is going through now and create a new world.
Stephen, good job. Good luck with this. Don't stay away too long next time, okay?
Oh, exactly. I'd love to see you again. You're doing great work on this show, George. God bless.
Dr. Stephen Greer and Paula, you take care of yourself as well.
Thank you.
Bye, Paula. Love you,
George.
There you go. We'll be back in a moment with, that's right, Dr. Doom, Major Ed Dames.